Good evening, everyone, and welcome to RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. I'm Chris Michael, so glad you could be with us this evening. A lot of football talk on tonight's program, but first we introduce the co-host of the program, senior sports writer at The Morning Call, Mr. Keith Groller. Keith?
Weave, I got to tell the weave, I made it on time. Barely, but I made it on time.
He was ripping you last week. I don't know.
He always is ripping. He's always ripping. I don't know what's with him.
By the way, and I do have to thank another Nazareth person, Mindy. Who people know
Mindy
very
Heimbach.
Well. Yes, Mindy Heimbach.
Coach.
She predicted Nazareth's win last week, so I want
so
to give her props
weave.
For that.
And so did the Weave.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Which he's reminded me often.
And Mindy wants me to say that the reason why Nazareth is now doing so well is because we featured the Nazareth cheerleaders on our high school football preview show at the fair this year. So there you go. That's why. Forget Tom Falzone and his great coaching. The great play of
Well, I'm
Liachi
all for cheerleaders. If that's the good luck charm, let's bring them all on here. Yeah. I love to talk to
me.
To the cheerleaders.
We just need a bigger studio. Have you, real quickly, because I know we're going to get to high school football talk or NFL football talk. Have you? When was the last time you remember this wild a year? For the EPC, the LVC, whatever you give the name to the bigger schools, every time you think one team, Emmaus went down last week, you go back to Freedom. That was a team that a lot of people thought was going to be the best team in the area this year. They may not even make the playoffs right now,
right?
Even with an expanded format.
They're definitely on the bubble right now. So is Easton. Whoever thought Easton would be on the bubble. Yeah. No, it's been fun. It's been crazy. I mean, for so many years, it's been Parkland and then everybody else. Yeah. And Easton. Basically, it was Parkland or Easton every year. And I think it's a lot of fun. I mean, every week we have a three or four games that are totally unpredictable. And you know what? It really doesn't matter because they're all going to play each other again, probably in a couple of weeks when we get to the expanded District 11 tournament. But I think it's been a lot of fun. It's been good for the fans. I mean, those Nazareth people, they were pumped up.
Yeah.
Very, very happy with that upset win over Emmaus on Friday night.
It wasn't an upset because Andy and Mindy had it ahead of time.
Oh, all right. You and I called it an upset.
Absolutely.
They're smarter than us.
Yep. All right. We're going to get to more high school football talk later in tonight's program. But first, let's introduce two guys who are experts in a couple different areas, too. We have Al Thompson from Football Stories, the editor-in-chief. Rock Hoffman, the writer for Football Stories. They're both talk show hosts on 6:10 a.m. And they also cover high school sports. So we'll get to your expertise in the high school area as well. But welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us.
Alan Rock.
Thanks a lot. And Keith, don't worry about being late. You're like Satchel Paige. I can't start the show without you.
I don't know about that. I've been here late, and they have started the show without me.
He pulled out my mic one time. Guys, we'll start with the Eagles, too. And last week we said that Carson Wentz was the greatest quarterback of all time. He threw an interception last week, so he's been downgraded to a surefire Hall of Famer. real quick, though, I thought they played well. I know a lot of people were disappointed. People are saying, well, now they lost to the Lions. Forget the Super Bowl. Forget this. Forget that. That's going to really put them behind the eight ball in order to make the playoffs and so forth. But really, when everyone kind of calms down and looks at the season, kind of put the Lions' loss in perspective and how do they move forward from here?
Well, I think what happened last week was they were very familiar. Matthew Stafford was familiar with Jim Schwartz and what he was going to throw at him at the beginning. And mm-hmm. I think that what happened was what I predicted during the game, that they were going to run out of plays. And it happened in the second half because they scored three points, and that the only 3 points they got was on a turnover. So the Eagles kind of caught up to what the Lions threw at them, but they committed some ghastly mistakes in the second half, including a critical turnover. And one positive thing you have to take out of it is Wentz did bring them back and did give the defense and special teams a lead, and it just wasn't quite enough. And, of course, he throws the interception on the last real play of the game. And so it's nothing to worry about. They were in the game all the way, and it had to be a little bit of a letdown. If you just crushed a Super Bowl contender, Pittsburgh Steelers, the last game you played, then you had that kind of layoff. It looks like the layoff wasn't such a good thing after all. So, mm-hmm. But he hasn't changed, but I don't think the league has figured him out yet. Usually you hear from the experts, from the coaches, that it takes about 6 games before you kind of get a book on him. Mm-hmm. And we'll see how he does 6, 7, 8 games into the season.
Yeah. Rock, were you concerned by the loss of the Lions as much as some people were?
Well, I was in the same camp as Al. I felt like that the break was going to be good for them, and it turned out they probably came out a little bit flat, and the Lions were able to get the jump on them, and they were just not able to come all the way back, although they did take the lead. And I think it had to be a little bit disappointing that the defense wasn't able to get that stop. After shutting the Lions down the whole second half, they were able to get that one short drive after the fumble to get the kick the game-winning field goal. But as far as, I mean, they were 3-0, having beaten the Steelers. The first two teams they beat, they should have beat their awful teams. So they're kind of, you know, probably where you would think they would be if knowing what you knew about how well Carson Wentz was going to play. Obviously, none of us knew going into that Cleveland game how well he was going to do. But if you said, all right, he's going to play great through for four games, and you said they'd be 3-1, you would take it.
Oh, absolutely. 3-1. I mean, I think, guys, I mean, let's go back to August. Let's not look at September 13th. How about August 13th? we thought this was going to be just a transitional year, a rebuilding year, get the kid wet. At one point, we didn't even know he was going to get on the field. And here we've seen he's a very nice quarterback with a lot of growing to do, but a very nice quarterback. And my goodness, I mean, I feel like we're just the if you're an Eagle fan, you feel like we're in the gravy stage here yet that you know have a 3-1 football team with a division that it's going to be interesting. I mean, this is going to be I think this one is really going to be an interesting battle going down to Washington D.C. This Sunday, or Landover, Maryland, as the case may be. What are your thoughts on this?
It seems like the division is much better. The NFC East is much better than it was last
year. The Cowboys
are,
that's for sure.
And Dak Prescott has been very impressive. Kirk Cousins wasn't at the beginning of the season, but they have won 3 in a row. The Eagles, obviously, are much better than people thought. And I think the biggest asset that Carson Wentz has is his defense, is because he doesn't have the weight of the world on his shoulders that, geez, you know, I can't depend on my defense to get stops. So far this season, most of the time they have. So for a quarterback, that is huge, to know that he has a great defense, that he doesn't have to be perfect. And I think playing loose like that has been a big advantage for him to come out of the chute. And he is really confident. It's very impressive. If you were down there at some of the practices, I'm sure you were, and training camp, he wasn't really all that impressive. And maybe that was because Bradford was here and he was having such a good camp. I mean, he was tearing whatever they threw at him on defense apart, Sam Bradford was, and he would go a half hour at a time without one pass not being completed. He would complete every pass. So I think once Sam Bradford was gone, you could see almost like the weight.
Well, he was given the keys to the car.
To the car, and he's been pedal to the metal so far, yeah.
How about Ryan Matthews? I know he was injured earlier, but Doug Peterson claims he's healthy. And yet every time he says he's healthy, he's ready to go, he throws out a clunker of a game. Should we be concerned, and should we start looking at guys like Smallwood or Barnes handling the ball a little bit more? And why is Matthews struggling so much? Is he hurt and they're just hiding it? Or why isn't he as productive as he was a year ago?
Well, Ryan Matthews has been hurt his entire career. This is part of his – that's who he is. Yeah. When he's healthy, he's terrific. He's a 1,000-yard rusher. I think the future is Kenyon Barner and Wendell Smallwood, and they've shown so far that they're capable. So I think he's just going to kind of chug along here with three guys, and if Matthews is healthy, he's going to play him. He's going to, you know, he'll make those big plays here and there, like the 30-yarder he had, I think it was in the opener. But he's going to continue to struggle with injuries. He's always going to be in and out of the lineup. And that's just, you have to accept that. That's the way it is.
Do you think if they have to rely on like a guy like Smallwood more, will they be all right with him? Or
so far, they've shown they can play. Oh. Kenyon Barner has the best yards per carry on the team by far, I believe, right now. And I like Kenyon Barner, and I like Wendell Smallwood.
I think part of the – yeah, they did run the ball, I think, 21 times on Sunday. Mm-hmm. But they were down. So, yeah, that kind of takes you out of your running game and makes you almost one-dimensional. And I think they tried to – keep it honest, by running it 21 times, but they probably had more packages for those guys that they just couldn't get to because of the fact that they were down in that game. So I think that, you know, if they get a lead or establish the run early against Washington, Washington has the third worst rushing defense in the league, so it kind of calls for running some guys this week.
Yeah, and I hate to pick on the wide receiver because we did that last week with Jordan Matthews, but Nelson Aguilar, I think he really struggled. He's not getting open. I know this is obviously a concern, the wide receiving core, but is it good enough, or can it be good enough if they do get to a playoffs that they can rely on any of these guys to come up with big catches or big situations and spread the field?
Good enough to beat the Steelers, wasn't it?
I still don't think, I don't want to take anything away from the Eagles. I mean, Eagles fans will get mad. I still think they had that turnover early. It kind of set them out of their mindset. And the Steelers kind of thought they were going to just walk through Philadelphia. They thought it's rebuilding year. They didn't take it seriously. So I'm not solely convinced. I don't think it was as dominant a performance as it was more, a little bit the Steelers were a little playing over their heads. And my Eagles cameraman here is ready to throw stuff at me.
Well, it's the Chuck McNerd curse. They haven't won a game in Philadelphia since 1965, so I don't know how they could possibly be overconfident coming into Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I think he wanted to get – and he got slaughtered. He got sacked, what, seven or eight times the last time he was here?
In the power ratings, you rank the teams. You're not going to put the Eagles ahead of the Steelers at the end of the season.
No, they're not right now if you look at the power rankings. Obviously, the Eagles lost this week. Well, going back to that game, I do agree with you a little bit because they also were coming off a tough division game with Cincinnati the week before, and this is a non-conference game, so you're not going to be as jacked, I don't think, for those games as you would be a division game. Like the Eagles had this week, you know, you'd like to think that, who knows, maybe they were looking ahead a little bit. You know, last week kind of overlooking Detroit, looking ahead at Washington, team that has kind of, you know, put the dagger in their heart the last couple years.
Yeah. Well, the Steelers are certainly, that was the tonic they needed. Boy, they played good football since that point in time. And sometimes you need a little stumble like that early in the season to get you going. Yeah. And that seems to be the case with them.
Big V, Al and Rock, I think, are the only reporters who can say his name.
We did. We're like 5 o'clock hitters here. You know what I mean? Before the camera went on, we were rattling it off. You first, Rock.
Halapulavati Vaitai.
Easy for
is
you
the new
to say.
Right guard.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right tackle.
I only had to say it once. Got it out of the way. We don't have to say it again.
Just Vaitai from now on.
Yeah. Halapulavati Vaitai.
It's
Vaitai.
Funny watching when Lane Johnson was suspended. They said, okay, Lane Johnson is out. He's going to be replaced by Vaitai. No one wanted to touch his first name.
It goes back when I was really excited when the Eagles got Nnamdi Asamoah because I knew how to say his name. A lot of people struggled early with Nnamdi Asamoah and then.
Nnamdi Asamoah is Jane Smith
They couldn't wait to get him out of town. Once they learned his name, his name was Mud.
And Vaitai's other brothers' names are?
Will and Kevin.
Yeah. They're real names. No. So now that we got his name out of the way, how do you think he's going to do? And do you think they should have at least played him a little bit earlier in the season? This is going to be a tough first chance to be out on an NFL field starting in a big divisional game. Do you think they should have tried to mix him in or get him any kind of on-the-field playing time?
Well, knowing the way Doug Peterson is, he's a disciplined guy. And if Lane Johnson is available, he's my right tackle. End of discussion. He's not going to play around. He's got to pile up as many wins as he can while he's still here. Obviously, he's out for 10 games. He's also got to allow, I think he let Lane was played probably the best 4 games of his career, the first 4 here. To maybe have it so that there is the least amount of resentment for doing something so boneheaded, that he's out 10 weeks and you've got a rookie quarterback back there, you've got a suspect running game, your Ryan Matthews with all his injury problems. So he couldn't have done anything dumber than what he did. And so, but he's his right tackle. And he said when he comes back, even with 3 days rest before they play the Giants on Thursday Night Football, he's probably going to be the right tackle. Unless Vaitai comes in here and does what Tom Brady did when he got his chance and just light it up. If he's a tremendous right tackle, Lane Johnson's got a lot of problems because his contract is not guaranteed at all. He's $35 million in guaranteed money.
I'm just
money.
Hoping he survives the next 10 days. I'm not worried about him taking Lane's job.
Yeah, no. And the thing is, they can't let what happened to him happened to Winston Justice for the Eagles that night he had against the Giants where he led in 6 out of the 8 sacks, and he was never the same player again. He never played well again for the rest of his career. It really ruined him. And you can say the same thing about Justin Pugh from Council Rock South, who played at Syracuse. He had a similar night against the Eagles where Eli Manning got sacked like 8 or 9 times, and he has never really fully recovered from that. And so they don't want that to happen to Vaitai this Sunday. So they're going to give him a lot of help. They're going to make sure that he has – Brent Celek is probably going to be glued to his hip because he's the best blocking tight end on the team. And you're going to see a running back there to chip people. And so they want to make sure he gets through that first game with somebody to build on.
Our special guests are Al Thompson and Rock Hoffman from Football Stories, the magazine. We have a picture of their cover that's their newest edition that's coming out. They're also on the radio as well on 6:10 a.m. in the Delaware Valley area. But I guess there's no surprise, future Hall of Famer Carson Wentz is on the cover of this week's magazine.
I am editorial whiz here. Like, who do you pick for your cover? Well, let me think.
It'll probably always be Wentz every week, right?
Actually, it's his second time on the cover.
Second time on the cover. All right, we're going to continue the conversation. We're previewing the big Eagles-Redskins game this weekend. And coming up, we're going to be joined by a writer and commentator, Rick Snyder, from the Washington area, talking Redskins and Eagles. Right now, our trivia question, though, does deal with the NFL. Might stump some people here. Which state produced the most current NFL players as of the opening season roster? Which state has produced the most current NFL players as of the start of the season? And here's more information on how and what you can win.
This. You could win a $10 gift certificate to use to see the latest movies and the hottest music, sports, and pay-per-view events on RCN On Demand. You can only win one gift certificate every 4 months, but if you haven't won a prize in the last 30 days, you may be able to win another great prize. Call or email us right now with your trivia response. Callers get priority, but if we don't get a caller with the correct answer during tonight's live sports talk show, we'll take all email responses and conduct a random drawing on our next live show to determine the winner. Watching the show on replay or VOD? Send us your guess now, and you just might win an RCN On Demand $10 certificate. Good luck with Sports Talk Trivia.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk. Our special in-studio guest, joining co-host Keith Kroller and myself, Al Thompson and Rock Hoffman from Football Stories Magazine and their radio show on 610 AM in the Delaware Valley. And we're now very pleased to be joined by Rick Snyder, writer from the Washington Post Express and sports columnist and contributor for 106.7 The Fan and PressBoxDC.com. Rick, welcome to Sports Talk.
Thanks. I've never been on TV in Philadelphia.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have you here. We're very happy to have you. And by the way, congratulations on your Sports Writer of the Year for NSSA a few years ago. I know you do a great job down in Washington.
Thank you.
I want to start a little bit. When we set up the interview a week ago, we're going to talk Redskins. But obviously, there's a big game going on in Washington tonight. So. If I could pick your brain a little bit about the Nationals, and we'll throw some questions at you there. Max Scherzer starting Game 5, the decisive game tonight in Washington. How optimistic are you in the Washington area that the Nationals can pull off a win in advance of the next round?
Well, you know, being a Washington sports fan, you kind of expect bad things. You know, they don't win too many of these deciding games. You know, they've only been in the playoffs twice since they arrived here from Montreal in 2005. And they got knocked out in the first round both times when people thought they'd be World Series teams. So maybe the reverse logic happens here. They should beat Los Angeles here at home. You've got an ace on the mound where they necessarily don't. This team has hit well throughout the series. So you'd like to think they should win this game, but you never know anymore.
Are you impressed by the way the teams come together? You lost to Wilson Ramos right before the playoffs started. Steven Strasburg's been out a couple weeks, and according to reports, he might not be able to go, even if the Nationals will win and make it to the next round. And yet you have some different heroes coming up, and the team's kind of bonded over not having some of their key players around. How much is that kind of factored in the kind of the euphoria that has gone on in Washington with some of the lesser-known players coming up and playing some big roles in the first round of the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, it was a little pessimism entering the playoffs because they also had Harper hurt his thumb that week before the season's ending, and Daniel Murphy missed the last 10 days or so. And yet they both came back and have played reasonably well. And losing Strasburg really hurt them. I mean, he's got an elbow problem. He tried to throw. They're not going to play him until the spring. I don't care what happens. They just can't afford to risk him. So, yeah, when you lose your ace pitcher and a really good 300-hitting catcher, man, but Lobatone has replaced him at catcher and done very well. He had the winning home run in game 2. So they can't really complain. The hitting's all been there. The pitching has just not quite been there. Scherzer didn't look that good in game 1. I've never seen a guy win 20 games, lead the league in strikeouts, and give up as many home runs as he does. He just gets crippled by that. Yeah. And that's going to be the key tonight. Got to keep the ball in the park.
Rick, I'm just curious. Here in Philadelphia, it's all Eagles all the time. Even when the Phillies are in the playoffs, more people still interested in the Eagles. Sixers make the playoffs, more people still interested in the Eagles. Flyers in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Again, more people still interested in the Eagles. How is it? What's the pecking order down here? Are people excited about this Nationals baseball team, or is it really a Redskins season down here?
Well, it's still an emerging baseball town, and it's such a transient city. You don't have longtime fans anyway of the team, because we lost the team for about 30 years, you know, the gap there. So they're still building that. On Sunday, we've always wondered what would happen if the Nationals had to play a playoff game against the Redskins. Now, the Redskins were in Baltimore, so there's not an attendance comparison, but the TV ratings were 6 times more Redskins fans for watching them play Baltimore than those watching the Nationals. Now, that surprised me a touch. Tonight, actually, the Capitals open tonight, too, like 2 miles away. It'll be interesting to see what the attendance figures and TV are for this versus the Nats, you know, going head-to-head. But I used to say 5 years ago, I'd say that the Redskins were, 85% of the market. I'd say they're probably 75% now. The Nats got a little more into the market. The Wizards and Caps have a piece, but it's still overwhelming the Redskins. You can write anything about the Redskins and people will read it.
Well, that could change a little bit if they can get a Game 5 victory tonight. I know they've had some heartbreak down there. As you said, I remember a couple years ago the Cardinals came way from behind in a Game 5 situation down here, and that had to really stun them. So maybe you just don't quite believe in this team yet.
That's part of it. That Game 5 loss to St. Louis, where they lost it in the ninth inning of the last game, that just broke everybody's heart. San Francisco just beat them straight up. They lost an 18-inning game to San Francisco in the 2014 playoffs. That broke their backs. This one has been a good back and forth, two pretty even teams. I think people are optimistic that if the Nats can win, they can beat Chicago. And people talk about Chicago's 1908, but Washington baseball hasn't had a winner since 24. So that's a long time, too. I think they can beat the Cubs, matching them up. And we'll see what happens in the World Series. But you don't get many chances like this. This is why you should be excited that here's a chance. But I think the Caps are what's really broken this city's heart. They keep getting knocked out early in playoffs. And even though it's not a big Caps fan town, that kind of thing just lingers.
Hey, Rick, it's Al Thompson here from Football Stories here in Philadelphia. And I had a question for you about the Redskins and their home games. It's a game I make every year. I'll be there this Sunday. And when you go there, there's this huge amount of the away team's fans there. There will be thousands and thousands of Eagles fans there. And I think every home game, there is a huge contingent of the other team's fans, and you don't see that all that much in too many other stadiums. Is the Snyder hatred still there, that season ticket holders don't go and they just sell their tickets? Or can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, it goes to the root of the city. This is one of a few cities in the world that was built as a capital city, and it's always had transients here. I'm a native Washingtonian. I am a very big minority of that. 1 in 5 people in this city were born in another country, much less another place. So what I'm saying is there's always people from other places here. It's the majority of people who live here are from somewhere else. So a lot of those Eagles fans you see are actually transplants from Philly who are down here, and they live here every day, and they want to go see their team. And that's true of a lot of places. But you're right that, you know, the crowds can get really big for opposing teams, more at football games than even at – used to be a lot of Phillies fans in Nats games, but not so much anymore. You see more Mets fans here. But, you know, it's a city where, you know, everyone is from somewhere else. You can wear your opposing jersey here, and no one's going to get in a fight unless you start it, and then you're going to have one. But it's not a harsh atmosphere like that, because all your neighbors are from somewhere else. That's just how that goes to the root of the city. You know, the thing with Snyder, it's just people don't come more, you know, at times in the last few years. But since he hired a real GM and Scott McLuhan, people have kind of backed off him a little bit. And he bought a lot of goodwill this week because he actually used his private plane twice this week to send relief supplies to Haiti. So, you know, he does step in there with charities a lot. So I think his thing has diminished some. But, sure, I think the crowd will be, given the Eagles are doing well, it wouldn't surprise me if it's a 60-40 Redskins Eagles crowd. It's going to be a big contingent.
Our guest on the phone is Rick Snyder from the Washington Post-Express and a contributor and columnist with The Fan 106.7 and PressBoxDC.com. Speaking about this Sunday's game, I know the big story, Jordan Reed might not be able to go. If he does, in fact, have a concussion, it would be his sixth. He's part of the concussion protocol now. What's his immediate timeline? What's the latest on him? And if he's not able to go Sunday, which it doesn't look like, how much are they going to miss him? Probably Kirk Cousins' favorite target, and he's been a Philly killer over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I would not expect him. He showed up Tuesday with concussion symptoms. They didn't even recognize it in the game. And because this is his sixth one, you know, you really got to be careful with this guy. You know, out of your 53-man roster, 18 of those men will develop dementia problems late in life. 18. You know, and so someone with six concussions plus at least one in college, you have to have a serious talk about it. You know, how much more can you continue and still be able to think clearly at 40? There's a big thought about all that. Sua Cravens, a rookie, also had a bad one, and I'm not sure he's going to make it back either. I kind of doubt either. I would expect Pierre Garçon to get a lot more catches this game. He's usually the second favorite target. They've not had a good chance to throw to DeSean Jackson. Defenses are dropping back in the zone coverage a lot more this year, and they've really neutralized DeSean a lot. He still gets his chances, but not nearly as many. But this team can't run the ball worth a darn. So, you know, teams have been backing off, you know, playing deep coverage. So they're just playing dink and dunk a lot. And that's why Jordan's getting so many catches. But I expect probably Pierre Garçon to be like leading receiver with 7-8. And the problem is they don't have a real good red zone receiver. Jordan was their best one. And the kid they drafted in the first round, Josh Doxson, has Achilles problems, so he hasn't been able to play much. So that's the hard part for the Redskins, getting in from the 20.
Rick, I just want to ask you, it must be fun to cover that team because it seems like there's always a soap opera or two brewing, and especially around the quarterback position. Obviously, when they get off to the bad start, there were some reports that anonymous people, probably DeSean Jackson being one of them, taking shots at Cousins. Has that been soothed over? Has it been kumbaya time down there? Everybody on the same page now going forward?
Well, they've won three straight, so everybody's happy. You know, that's the bottom line. You win, everything's okay. You lose, everybody starts being petty about stuff. And when they were 0-2, they went up to have to play the Giants, and they don't win in New York very often. You thought, wow, the season could go right here. I think they're back on track. I think they're a 7-9 win team. And games like Sunday are going to make a difference in which one they finished. They're not very good at home. You know, they're 1-2. They've just never been very good at FedEx Field. It's not like the old RFK days. They have a losing record in their own home stadium. So, and the crowd, like you say, is not, you know, the crowd's quick to boo and leave. You know, at the end, if the Eagles win, you'll see more Eagles fans in the stadium in the fourth quarter than Redskin fans. So, you know, right now everybody's happy, but it's just a loss away from everybody being mad again.
Well, it could be a quote away, Rick, if judging from DeSean Jackson's conference call today with Philadelphia media. He left the door open for a possible return here after this season, because this is the last year of his contract, right, Rick? Can you confirm
right.
that?
Yeah, he and Pierre Garçon are both going to turn 30 and both be free agents. The thought is the Redskins will only sign one of them. And most people would rather see them take DeSean because he does something very few receivers really can do, where Pierre does something well, but a lot of people can do it. Well, I know the Redskins are going to make a move to try and sign him, but like you say, he doesn't have to stay here. If he really wants to go to Philly, he could.
He spoke glowingly of Doug Peterson because he knew him when he was here. He was the quarterback's coach and offensive coordinator. So he spoke glowingly of it, and he seemed to be rejoicing the fact that Chip Kelly was gone. And he was flat out asked, would you consider coming back? And he said, you know, after this year, whatever team calls, he was saying things like that. And then he did say, I hope it's Washington, which he has to do. But he clearly left the door open that he would not be against a reunion with a lot of these guys were his teammates then. And the one thing the Eagles desperately need is a guy like DeSean Jackson. And that storyline may open up for you tomorrow. When your locker room opens,
I've covered sports in this town 38 years, and I've learned one thing about free agents. it's all about the money and nothing else. So they all chase the money. Enough. You can talk about other things. It really don't matter. Look at Pujols. He was offered $210 million to stay in St. Louis where they loved him, and he went to $240 in California where nobody cared. For the $30 million that he'll never even spend in his life. But that's what they do. Now, if they like it there, that's a bonus. And everybody says on the way out the door, yeah, I hope to stay here, but it doesn't matter. It's all lip service.
Well, they all said that about Curt Schilling, too, about his money and where'd that get him?
Rick, before we let you go, I just want to pin you down here. What are your keys for Sunday's game, Eagles against the Redskins, and what's your final score, prediction-wise?
Well, I hadn't even thought about it. I would probably say Eagles 24-21. You know, it's going to be a close game with some scoring. The Redskins got to try and run a little. You know, they just have not done very well with it for different reasons. The defensive line has to stop the run. It's really a big man war. They haven't done, Baltimore ran down the field right away on the Redskins, scored, and then gave it up and never did it again and just scored a field goal the rest of the game. Mm-hmm. You know, the back four of Redskins are pretty decent, but the front seven is not. So if they can somehow stop the Eagles from quick striking against them, halfway play decent on both sides of the line, they can win this game. I mean, this team is really resilient. I'll give them that. And they have a really good field goal kicker and those kind of things. They've won some close games here lately. So I think the thing I've learned watching this series for, I don't know, 20 years, is that the weirdest games of the year tend to be Redskins-Eagles games. The ball bouncing weird, the wrong team you think winning, just the weird stuff in this series. And nothing surprises me when they two play.
Yeah. All right, Rick, thanks so much for your time. Best of luck. Thanks again for joining us on Sports Talk. Hope to have you on again sometime.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right, Rick Snyder, outstanding writer from the Washington Post and contributor on 106.7 The Fan. Also has a great Twitter handle, at Snide Remarks, too. Let's quick squeeze in one phone caller for a trivia. Ray has been waiting from Easton, wants to take a shot at our trivia question. Ray, welcome to Sports Talk.
Chris, how are you?
Good, Ray. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Thanks for waiting.
I want to take a shot at the trivia.
One more time, we'll give you the question for people just joining. What state has produced the most NFL players as of the opening season roster? Your guess?
Florida.
Oh, nailed it right off the bat. Florida, very good. 226 players came out of the Florida area. Florida also has produced the most all-pro players from last season, too. So,
do you know who the runner-up was?
Ohio would be my guess. Keith
Al? I would say Texas or California.
California.
Okay, got it. Oh, well, Ray, thank you. We'll be in contact with you after the show. Great job to nail that right out of the gate here.
Thanks.
All right. Ray, thanks for joining us, also to Rick Snyder. Right now it's time for the segment called Growler's Grumblings, and that's where Keith gets to sound off and talk about anything that he would like to talk about and discuss going on in the world of sports. Keith?
Well, I can't even pronounce this guy's name. He's a tennis player. Karagias or something like that? I don't know. I bring him up. I've always defended today's athletes. Say they, boy, they're more conditioned. They work hard, with some exceptions, of course. Especially at the high school level, at the college level, the pressure is on them. They're pushed from the time they can walk. And this guy, I just saw this on Mike and Mike this morning, and they were talking about it. And the only reason he made their show is because this guy is getting paid a lot of money. He's in a tournament. It's a packed house. I forget where the tournament was. And he is like just, you know, like me and you would be out there on a tennis court. And then they queried him. They questioned him in the post-match press conference. And he says, hey, I could do whatever I want to do. I don't care about those people out there. I don't care. They know I'm an unpredictable character. So they're going to get what I give them. And, I mean, this is what – I mean – I know tennis doesn't get a lot, and I know we're a football nation, yeah, and we still love our baseball, and more people, thanks to ESPN, care about basketball than ever before. Yeah. A lot of people think the season's too long, and I'm one of them. Sure. I even think college is now too long of a season. But, I mean, so a sport like tennis needs stars, and this guy's evidently a very good player. But, I mean, you're not helping the image of tennis or today's athlete when you say – but I could care less about the fans. And he's going to get fined for it, but the guy's making millions of dollars. And I wish I could correctly pronounce his name.
Then it's good you're not pronouncing it or not saying it.
But I always like to give you a negative and a positive. Real quick on the positive side, sure. I loved what the Miami Heat did. I mean, this is that city's obviously in tremendous mourning when they lose the great star Jose Fernandez, and they went out of their way at their first, I guess, exhibition game the other night to pay tribute to the fallen Miami Marlins pitcher there. And I commend – I love when, another team in a city kind of pays respect to another franchise in the same city. Sometimes franchises are bumping heads all the time.
I love what, especially
in New York when you're fighting for the back page of the Post all the time or the Daily News. But I love what the Heat did. In honoring the Marlins and the Fernandez family.
All right, very good. At this time, our second break of the evening, and there was a big high school football game in the D.C. region last week between Eastern and Dunbar High School. Here's highlights from that contest with this week's DKN Sports Minute.
This is the DKN Sports Minute. The 4-2 Eastern Ramblers visited the 3-3 Dunbar Crimson Tide. Eastern was led by their quarterback, number 7, Jerome Johnson. He dipped and dashed 35 yards into Crimson Tide territory. Three plays later, number 4, Kadeem Preston, charged in for the score. Ramblers go up 6-0. Dunbar even the score when QB number 2, Willie Thorne, hits number 1, Jonathan Smith, in the end zone. Point after, no good. Scores even at 6. Midway through the second quarter, Jerome Johnson breaks loose, scrambles better than a dozen eggs, and hits number 9, wide receiver Miguel Owens, for the score. Then, just before halftime, Jerome Johnson fakes the handoff and escapes with the bootleg for 6. Final score of 26-12. This has been the DKN Sports Minute.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. Joining Keith Brohler and myself, Al Thompson and Rock Hoffman from Football Stories, the magazine, and their radio sports talk show on 6:10 a.m. on Wednesday nights. We're going to get to the NFL talk again in just a moment, but Al and Rock, you spent a lot of your time covering high school in the Delaware Valley area, and of course, people in the Lehigh Valley are hoping to see a lot of the teams from your area come playoff time when we get the state playoffs. So maybe you could talk about some of the teams down there. Some of the traditional powers are good, as usual, and then some of the other familiar names aren't so good so far this fall. So
no, well, and it's a little bit deceiving. Everybody knows St. Joe's Prep. They're 5-0, ranked number 1 in Pennsylvania, 19. They're in the top 20 in just about every national poll they're in. So they're far and above, a cut above everybody else. North Penn, Neshaminy, Ridley, Perkiomen and Valley are all having good seasons, but they are clearly all second tier. Yeah. A shout out, of course, to North Penn and Kelly McNamara from North Penn, the gal, a kicker they have, laid the wood
National
on
a
kick returner that is, viral all over the country, that hit. So good for her. And, of course, Central is a great and incredible, iconic program in Philadelphia. They're 6-0, but they don't get any love. They're 91 in Pennsylvania, and I don't even know what the number is nationally, but that's a great program. Wood starts off the season 0-2-1, and if you just look at that, you're like, geez. Like, all three teams were
great teams.
Top 60 in the country. Yeah, they lost to Bergen Catholic, who were number 2 in New Jersey and number 59 in the nation. And then after that, they lose to the Prep pretty bad, 42-24, I believe it was. But Wood has reeled off 4 straight wins, and I think they're the odds-on favorite for 5A. In the 4A, and Springfield's having a great season. Springfield, I have a lot of respect for. Springfield Delco.
7-0.
I've covered up a couple of their teams, 7-0. They don't get a whole lot of rankings, but they're one of these teams that has no size at all. You watch their linemen walk out, and like their uniforms are hanging off them. They're so thin. But yet, this is great coaching. And it's Chris Britton, who's been there for a long time. He does a really good job with them. And they just win. They beat Ridley, I think, 2 weeks ago. They are he just has them coached up. And they're going to run into one of these superpowers in the playoffs, but I think they're going to be representing District 1.
What's the thought process down there? In either 1 or 12, about the extra classifications. I mean, some people like it up here because they have more opportunities, and some people are like, come on, we don't need six. What's the general thinking of most of the coaches in the program?
Would they rather have just go back to four divisions?
Well, some would. Some would, and some think it's, well, here's the one situation we have up here. 5A, we have four schools. All four are in the playoffs, back in June, yeah. when they approved the classifications and the enrollments. So we have, those people know they're in no matter what, if they're 0-10 or 10-0. There's some situations where good teams are going to still be left out, but by and large, the playoffs have become for everybody but the truly bad. I mean, we have 13 teams in our 6A, 8 are going to make it. So the five, certainly the five that aren't going to make it in 6A here in District 11 are not truly deserving of it. Now, it does keep more people in the hunt longer, but I just was curious what the folks down there thought about it.
Well, I just think that the overall sentiment down here was, why are we going to six divisions? Are we turning into New Jersey, where they had 23
Which
state
is not
champions
a good thing.
Every year?
Yeah.
And it's pretty bizarre. I really haven't talked to the coaches that much about, I think they, in a lot of cases, like you talk to players and not even, they change leagues around so much today, they don't even know the name of the league they're in, so, let alone the 5A, 6A, 4A, and the Catholic League is split up into 5A, and 6A is the big division, and then the small division is the rest of them. And So it's still in the confusion stage down in Philly.
I wanted to see if that changed too, because I remember when first the Philadelphia Public League came in, and then about 6-7 years later the Catholic League came in, and it was still an acclimation process to them. It was like, we still care about our city championship, especially in a sport like basketball. Yeah. We care more about that than we care about the PIAA playoffs. Now up here, since we've had a number of teams win states almost from the very beginning with Bethlehem Catholic. It's always it's almost like made the regular season not what it used to be. The districts are not as big as they used to be. It's all about the state. Who's going to go? Who's going to get to Hershey? So it's a different mindset.
The city title. What was great about the PIAA for the Philadelphia Public and Catholic League teams was that because of Title IX, they ended the city title football game, if that makes any sense, because they couldn't hold it for boys and girls sports all the way across. So that ended the city title. It was a big deal in Philly. It was on TV. My brother played, won a city title, was on, we only had three channels in those days, five channels. That's how long ago it was, 1971. They beat Frankfurt 15-14 for the city title in front of like 30,000 people at Franklin Field, and it was broadcast on 6ABC.
And you didn't get to see the game because you had to hold the antenna, right?
But I mean, that was a big deal, and then it just ended because of politics.
Sure.
Now it's back. So you had a great game a couple years ago between the Prep and Frankfurt because they had a quarterback out. Frankfurt almost upset them. So in a way, that brought the city title back. So District 1 always plays District 12 to move on to the states. So in a lot of ways, that brought the city title back. So you're right. There's still more of a kind of a tunnel vision where the titles there still mean a lot, whether it's Catholic League, whether it's Suburban, whether it's the Central League, or whatever the leagues are, they still have a lot of meaning down there. And the states are what they are. Yeah. And just to finish off, Wood is 5A, 4A is Imhotep Charter.
Well, yeah. We know all about them.
You know, they're a criminal program right now, but they're not. They just have incredible coaching. Mark Schmidt picked up where Cosby left off when he quit. They're undefeated again this year, number 3 in the state of Pennsylvania, number 88 nationally, and they destroyed Malvern 48-7. A great program like that. O'Hara's pretty good in that level, but no one's going to stop Imhotep.
They
must be the most hated team out here in Central Pennsylvania.
We call them an all-star team. But what's the better brand of football? For years and years and years out, we could not get by District 1. It was Mike Pettine and CB West. Couldn't be. Then right. North Penn had some great teams, couldn't get by them. Neshaminy of Pensbury.
Yeah.
And now we don't even talk about District 1. We want to beat 12. We want to beat a Prep or a LaSalle, whoever we're going to face at the highest level in the state quarterfinals. What's the thinking down there? What's the stronger
The thing is, if you really look at the rosters of the Prep, You know, the big thing was import all these players, John Runyon and Reed, the kid who's playing for Penn State. Mm-hmm. When you look at it, those kids paid their tuition, and they went by the rules. John Runyon wanted his son to go to the prep, and they didn't recruit him. He didn't get any. He didn't need the money, that's for sure. Reed paid his tuition. If you go and you actually investigate it, they just simply run an incredible program. And the key to it, I think, is they have so much attention from college scouts that if your kid starts for the prep, he's not paying for college. So you're going to do whatever you can to get him there.
Well, and that's the way the success becomes like a magnet.
Right.
And I know we've had a lot of jealousy and a lot of envy and a lot of accusations up here, but it's the truth that the programs that succeed, the programs that send kids to college,
sure,
that's where you're going to
North Penn, to Chamonix. Brandon McManus was a huge ambassador for District 1 this year. And, of course, he follows up with Kelly McManus. I wonder if they're going to have like a photo op together, you know, and but no, those programs, that's where, if you're a college scout, that's where you start. If you're going to Philly, that's where you're starting off at with these programs.
Real quick, Rock. I know you've seen some other teams.
I always like the state playoffs because you got to see, you know, an Allentown Central Catholic against somebody from Philly or whatever the case may be. We've always had a place upstate. So I knew about Berwick. And, man, it would be great to see Berwick play. And I know they're in different divisions, but a CB West.
That's
back
the magic,
in the 80s.
A lot of people wanted to
and
see
you know, because Berwick was 3A and West was 4A, and it just never happened. But we did get to see a lot of great matches from teams you just kind of heard about. Well, geez, how good are they? And then, you know, obviously you hook up with somebody from out West that you've heard of, and, you know,
Cathedral Prep
or Pittsburgh Central Catholic, somebody like that. And so that's why I always like the state playoffs. Yeah.
We got to take our last break of the evening, our last feature. Parkland and Central Catholics volleyball team, just two of the Lehigh Valley schools that are ranked among the best in the state, squared off against each other this past week. Sports Talk videographer Alyssa Scheckler was on hand to talk to the Trojans, who won a tight match and also got post-match reactions.
Central is so aggressive. They serve aggressively, and their net play is really strong. And the way they move the ball around, their setting, it really makes it challenging to defend against.
I thought it was very competitive. We've been really preaching to stay focused and just get on top of any team we're playing right away. We didn't do that in the first set, but we really focused on it the next three, and I think we did a great job. Every team that we take on, it's a new day every day. The biggest thing is keeping focus. That's been our struggle, but I think we're doing a good job doing that too.
We're number three in 4A, and Central's number two in AAA. And this league has been so strong. Emmaus is number seven, and Liberty's number one. So we have a great league, and I think it's the best league in the state. And you've got to be able to be ready to play every night when you go into the gym.
But again, we're taking every day by day, every game. We're looking ahead in the future that much, but we really just look forward to the next game every time.
Welcome back to RTN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. Final minutes of tonight's program, so let's go right to the roundtable. A mix of local, regional, national sports topics for our guests. All right, topic number one, who is the best quarterback in the NFC East right now? The four quarterbacks, who would you take? Rock, we'll start with you.
Dak Prescott. He hasn't thrown an interception yet.
Oh.
Well, we definitely know who's not. We know that it's not Eli Manning, and we know it's not Kirk Cousins. I'm going to say it's a tie, Carson Wentz and Dak Prescott.
Tie? Wentz is in the Hall of Fame. What are you talking about? He's on the cover of Football Stories magazine. All right, Keith?
I'm going to go with Kirk Cousins. We'll see what the Eagles do to him without any running game, and hopefully that pass rush will get after him this week. But I'm going to go with Cousins.
And probably without Reed, the tie.
Carson Wentz gets, out of three people, he gets one tie. That's it.
I know. What's wrong with you? He's in the Hall of Fame. We put him in there last week. All right. Topic number two. Who do you like tonight's Game 5, Nationals and Dodgers? Al, we'll start with you.
I've got to go with the Dodgers with all the ex-Phillies on there. So they've been there.
And Chase Utley had a game winner of Game 4. Brock?
I'm going to go with the Nationals. Dusty Baker's been there before a few times, and I think he'll see them through and at least get to take on the Cubs the team that he almost got to the promised land.
I'm surprised they have Bryce Harper hitting two tonight. I was going to ask Rick about that, but we ran out of time. Keith, who do you like?
I'm going to go with Scherzer and the Nats. I mean, you got to go with the best pitcher.
All right, and topic number three, what will be the final order of the NFC East? We know the Eagles are going to win this weekend. So no, I didn't say that. Keith, what would you say the order, 1 through 4?
Dallas Cowboys on top.
Oh, you guys are killing me tonight.
Washington Redskins, Philadelphia Eagles, and New York Giants.
Oh. Rock?
I'll say the Giants last. I think the Cowboys are going to fade, so I'll make them third.
Redskins second,
Eagles first.
Yeah, Cowboys should be like in fifth. How about you?
I'm going to do the Cowboys winning the division with the Eagles and a tie, but they get the tiebreaker, the Cowboys, and then the Redskins, and then the Giants finish last because they're imploding.
Giants are imploding, absolutely. Yeah.
So that pretty much guarantees that the Giants will win the
Super Bowl. Not only the division, the Super Bowl,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Exactly.
All right, we only have 30 seconds, so real quick, who's your most underrated Eagle so far? What's an Eagle story that's gone under the radar so far? Either any of you. One name.
I'm going to go with Kenyon Barner. I think he's been a real force as a running back for them, and he's kind of held that running game together, and I think he will continue to be.
Yeah, I hope he gets more carries, too. I think he deserves it. All right, our big thanks to Al Thompson, Rock Hoffman from Football Stories Magazine and the radio show on 6:10 a.m. Also, thanks to Rick Snyder from the Washington Post Express for joining us. Keith, we'll see you in 2 weeks.
We're going to be at the parade next. Are we going to do the parade?
You're the Grand Marshal of the Jack Frost Parade. So we're going to be off next week. We'll be back live in 2 weeks here on RCN Sports Talk. For everyone at RCN TV, I'm Chris Michael. Good night, everyone.